Hi, and welcome to this week's issue of the Pod Mag. I'm Karen Foley.
And I'm Dave Middleton.
Well, Dave, I must say, I'm very impressed with our nice new office.
Isn't it fantastic?
It's very lovely. I love the glass fronted and the lovely clean floors and not a photocopier in sight. It's fantastic.
The income was quite nice. How much did we make in the end?
I think it was 58 pence.
58 pence?
Yeah.
Well, that's
all
pretty
that
good.
Work.
Yeah. Well. I don't know.
Anyway,
that's doubled my wage.
This is fantastic. What a location to present an entertaining news programme. So what have we got this week?
Well, we've got a lot of news coming up, and we're going to move on to that in a moment. But we've also had a pretty full inbox. So I think let's go to our inbox. Who's been emailing you then,
Well,
Karen?
I've had some emails from Susan Corbett, who says, "Hi, Dave and Karen." I think she means Karen and Dave there. Love the podcast. Sorry for not being in touch before. And Susan is studying DD131 alongside TD233. And she's just found the Pod Mags and she's realising what she's been missing. So welcome, Susan. We hope you're listening this week.
Well, I had an interesting email from somebody called Adrian Horn, and Adrian wanted to know whether the conference would be open to European students. And that's got a very simple answer, actually, Adrian. Yes, it's open to European students. And what we'd like at the Student Connections Conference is to bring people together wherever they are. And that's whether they're in Europe, whether they're in Australia or New Zealand or anywhere else in the world. They can come to the conference because it's all online, and it will mean that some people will probably be logging on in the early hours of the morning, their time, and the evening, our time. So, Adrian, yes, European students are more than welcome. Everybody's welcome.
That's the benefit of an online conference, isn't it? Anyone can come, and it'll be at a range of times of the day. So even if you do have a different time factor to us here in the UK, then you can log on at a time that suits you, and there'll be recordings as well. Right, I've had an email from Kerry Sharp as well. Now, Kerry's been emailing us a couple of times, and she's now said that she's very excited about the conference. She's registered, and she's going to be coming to the Activate workshops as well. And she's also very interested in our digital storytelling course. So she's put her name down for that. We've had lots of people interested in this, which is great to see. And we'll talk about that a bit later on the show.
Actually, we're going to talk about it any moment now.
Right, first on the news, we have our conference registrations. Now, this only opened a couple of weeks ago, but so far, almost 200 people have registered at the time of recording this, and they've been going up daily. So thank you for registering. Dave, tell our listeners what getting registered will mean.
Okay, well, the first thing that happens when you get registered is you give us your email address, and then we send you an email. Basically, registering at this stage doesn't commit you to anything at all. What it will do is allow you to be kept in touch with what's going on.
Right, and then the next item on the news is our conference blog. Now, Dave, you started this. What's been going on the blog?
Well, we thought we should have a blog to explain some of the issues that people aren't too clear about. And one of the questions, if you remember, somebody asked on a forum, and I believe it might be one of your forums, Karen.
Yes.
Which is the sort of discussions that Karen has on the forums on the modules she teaches, if you're unfortunate enough to have her as your tutor.
No.
is what exactly is an online conference? And I thought that was a really good question, actually. So I started to think about it, and then I started to find my fingers typing. And I decided this would be a good subject for a blog. So if you go to our blog, which is on the conference website, and you can get to the conference website from any module now, just click the link that says Student Connections and go to the conference website, click on the conference blog, and you'll find there's a couple of blog pieces there now. The first one, which I did, which is about what is an online conference, and then Karen is on there as well, and she's writing about what's going to happen at the workshops, which moves us to our next bit of news.
Absolutely. So the workshops. Now, you can read about these on the blog, as Dave says, but a lot of people have been sort of asking, well, what happens at a workshop? So these workshops are basically a chance to meet online. And before the conference, we'll be training people who want to learn certain new skills about these using our OU Live system. And these workshops will happen online as well. So what it'll be is it'll be Dave and I and probably about 10 to 20 students all hooking up and talking about social sciences. So if you're interested in exploring those ideas or just hooking up with Dave an online and finding out a bit more about the conference, then let us know you're interested and we'll register you on the workshops.
And remember, the workshops are only 1 hour, so we're not asking you to give up a large portion of your lives. You don't have to do any preparation in advance. There's no textbooks to read. You just turn up, we'll have a chat, find out what your ideas are, and we'll find a way of realising those ideas for the conference. And also, we've got a couple of top bloggers who are going to help us with those workshops. When we get onto the specifics of how to do a blog, we've got two real expert bloggers who have agreed to come along and help us out. And do you know who they are?
Who?
They are Meg Barker, who's... everyone likes Meg.
Yes.
And also Martin Weller, who's a fantastic blogger. I read his blog a lot, and he knows a lot about this kind of thing. So he's agreed to come along and help you. So that would be great as well.
Brilliant.
So do get signed up.
Excellent. I'm going to sign up for that one too myself. Then maybe we'll get some good blogs out of me yet. Okay, next on the news, digital storytelling.
Yeah, the digital storytelling. Well, literally, I am overwhelmed with the response to this. Lots of you, it seems, are very interested in digital storytelling. We're going to make some fantastic videos and they will be showcased during the conference.
So if you've written to us, we will get back to you to let you know whether we can include you in that project or not once we've sat down and looked through all the applications over the next few days.
All the news that you need about the conference, the updating, all the latest news is going to be found right here on the Podmag. So do keep listening every week to the Podmag. I know it all sounds pretty rubbishy most of the time, but occasionally within all that, we're going to put some nuggets of information that you will actually want to know.
Dave, what's this red line around our studio?
Well, I'm not entirely sure, but I was talking to one of the chaps and he told me it was to keep out the elephants.
Oh, but there are no elephants here.
You see, it's working.
So, Dave, for this week's interview, who did you manage to talk to?
And I found out the person in the faculty who is in charge of research is our Associate Dean for Research, Gillian Rose. And I went along to see Gillian a couple of days ago, and this is what she told me. Thanks for seeing us today, Gillian.
My pleasure.
You're the Associate Dean for Research in the Faculty of Social Sciences. Is there any research that the Social Sciences faculty have produced that has had an impact?
One I might pull out is a big European project that's actually about to finish in a couple of months that's been led by Professor Engin Aysin. What Engin's done is develop an amazing network across Europe of kind of citizenship activist groups of different kinds. So these are organisations that are trying to enable all sorts of people to claim their citizenship, but particularly working with groups of people who find that difficult, often perhaps because they are refugees or illegal immigrants. So I think that project is fantastic.
There must be a relationship between the research that people do and the kind of modules that we produce for the various qualifications.
A lot of research across the universities is into how to teach effectively. What are the most effective ways of teaching and learning? The second relationship that's quite direct between teaching and research is that students who are learning the materials that we create obviously, you know, want to get the best, the most cutting edge kind of content in terms of their courses. And that means that as academics writing those modules, we have to be informed about what's happening in our fields, you know, so that the students get the best quality kind of content for their modules. The third area of research, which is that part of our institutional sort of social role, I guess, it is to encourage people to think critically and carefully about how society is organised, the effects, the, you know, inequalities, and that's my view anyway. There's a strong social role, how perhaps we can intervene in it most effectively to you know, enhance quality of life for people.
Let me ask you about your research then. You've won awards.
I have. Well, one.
Okay, you won an award. Broadly speaking, what is your research area?
What I'm interested in is what photographs and other images that look like photographs do in the social world, if you like. So I've got a couple of particular sorts of photos I'm interested in, one of which is family photographs. Family photos for a long while were really dismissed by the few academics, researchers who bothered to look at them as being these very sort of selective visions of family life. You know, everybody's always happy and smiling and they get taken of birthday parties and Christmas, and you know, you never see your teenager stomping off in a tantrum in a family photo, or your baby screaming in a, you know, people take hundreds, probably thousands now of family photos, particularly now cameras are on phones as well. And that suggests to me that they're doing something for people in terms of their sense of identity of who they are. So I went off to interview lots of mums with young children about why they took photos and what they then did with them, what they wanted to see in them, and what they felt about them. And it turned out that they were really, really important, that they were massively important for being able to mark family relations, really important way of maintaining a sense of family identity, and very important for mums, I think, to be able to see photos of their children and being able to take photos and then look back on them at moments of more kind of calm and quiet when your kids are not with you. It's very important for mothers to sort of reflect on who they are as a mother and their relationship to their child through the photo. Although taking photos is often what dads do, and making albums and getting prints sorted and sending photos off to other family members, that seemed to be almost exclusively done by the mums.
Brilliant, thank you. Gillian Rose, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Oh, that's fantastic. Makes me think back on all the photographs I've taken over the years, and maybe that there is a use for them after all.
What are they waving at us?
They're like little tiny tennis rackets.
They've got a little tiny ball that they're bouncing up and down on it. I have to be careful saying that.
Well, it takes all sorts, doesn't it, round here? Anyway,
sorry, I better go and see what they want.
Oh, okay.
I'll be back.
All right.
Apparently, this is a squash court and they've got it booked.
Oh. Oh, well. We'd better go then. I think they're looking pretty angry. See you next time.